As we like to say around here, hello again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMZ's live daily afternoon call and talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. 9 counties in New York State have prohibited the acceptance of fracking waste, and 10 have banned using it for de-icing roads. State Senate Democrats held a hearing in Albany earlier this afternoon on the environmental impact of fracking waste. Last week, the western Massachusetts town of Pelham became the first municipality in the state to ban fracking and ban accepting fracking waste. The states of Massachusetts and Connecticut are currently considering bills to ban the waste as well. Proponents of fracking continue to argue that the process provides abundant energy and supports local economies. Joining me in the studio today is John Armstrong, a major voice in the anti-fracking movement here in New York. He's the communications director for Frack Action, and he's the spokesperson for the New Yorkers Against Fracking Coalition. What do you think about this very controversial topic on either side? Believe me, folks, I want to hear the arguments. Should fracking waste be banned? To be part of today's discussion, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. I said 1-800-348-2551. And, of course, you can get in touch with us online, and you can see all of the ways to do that at wamc.org/voxpop. But here's the secret. You're most likely to get through if all the lines are by just sending us a message at voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, guys, there are a couple of people on the phone. John Armstrong, let me begin by saying to you, what's going on here? You got a president of the United States who's for fracking. Now you got Charles Schumer, the senior senator. I guess he's the senior senator. Yeah, he is. From New York State, for fracking. He says the Democrats are all for fracking. It's become an economic issue in some places. And now to add to all of the problems that guys like you have, or me, one of the problems is you have the international situation with people making the argument that with what Putin is doing over there and his control of gas, we really have to frack here. It becomes an international security issue. What do you do? You got your hands full.
Well, it's definitely a bad situation, particularly when we have a president, Obama, who has long claimed that he's following the science on climate change. He's a, you know, he's an academic. He's said that he wants to stand up for everyone's rights and clean air and clean water and future generations. He says that on one hand, and then on the other hand, he just basically sells out the American people to the oil and gas industry, touting the fact that we're producing more oil and gas than we ever have before, meanwhile displaying a complete abdication of responsibility for the health and well-being of Americans across the country, which is what we've seen with fracking, where it's contaminating water in 30 states.
And they say, let me stop you, John. They say that it's not true, the fracking people. They say it isn't true. Nobody's ever given us one good example of one certifiable case and all the rest.
Well, they say it's not true, and they say that in some very well-done TV advertisements and armies of lobbyists, but that doesn't change the science. And just like climate deniers say, oh, the globe's not warming, they're wrong, too. It's the same thing on fracking. Here we have literally hundreds and hundreds of peer-reviewed journal articles by leading researchers at all the universities coming out with scientific studies showing water contamination with very toxic chemicals, hormone disruptors, cancer-causing chemicals, air pollution that's rampant that makes rural areas and mountain regions like Wyoming worse air quality than downtown Los Angeles on a bad day. Literally across the country, fracking operations and the associated development is spewing toxic chemicals and carcinogens into the homes that families and children, the elderly, breathe every day.
So why are the Democrats doing this?
Political expediency, they think, across the country.
What are they thinking?
They're thinking that they want the money from the oil and gas industry or that somehow they have to be for this development. But in fact, we're seeing a rapid shift in the American support. The national polls are starting to show the Democrats significantly oppose fracking, and even a majority of Americans, or at least a plurality of Americans, are opposing fracking. And you can look that up. As the recent Pew Research poll showed 49% to 44% of Americans oppose increased use of fracking.
Okay, John, I'm sorry to cut you off, because I know you have a great deal to say, and I think you do it so well. But we have a lot of people on the phones already. We actually have no free phone lines right now. Amazing. Let's go to Bill in Beacon. Okay. Bill, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Sure.
You had a fracking lobbyist on a while back, and he said, we've been doing fracking safely for 54 years, which is a lie that they repeat over and over. What they mean when they say fracking is just drilling for oil. It's not. not horizontal hydrofracking. And what I want to say about the water thing is whether or not it's found that water is polluted after the fracking fluid is injected, the fracking fluid comes from our water supply, and it's polluted before it even goes into the well. I don't understand why people can't get that through their heads.
Okay, let's get an answer from John. John.
Well, to your first point, Bill, I think you raised a key point of hypocrisy from the oil and gas industry, where they say we've been doing this for 50 plus years, but then they put out ads on TV that say, oh, this is a new breaking technology allowing us to access all of these vast resources of oil and gas. You can't have it both ways, although they try every day. But yes, they're using enormous amounts of water, but unlike farming or golf courses, which they often cite, they are destroying this water forever. They're mixing it with hundreds of toxic chemicals, as well as radioactive elements and heavy metals that are down in the shale, deep underground. So this water can never, ever be used for anything in the world again. It's taken out of the hydrologic cycle.
And then they just walk away from it. They leave it to the municipalities to deal with it.
But it's interesting. Bill, you, I'm really glad you're calling. But, John, I wanted to ask, or I can ask both of you this question. Now, apparently, this stuff is being used with the added chemicals on our roads. That's obviously got to contribute to runoff. Yes? No?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then that ends up in our drainage ditches, into our waterways, potentially on our farms. We're talking about radium, barium, these radioactive chemicals.
Do we know everything that's in there?
We don't know everything that's in there, or at least not the exact mixtures of them. But some studies have looked at this, and they've found that 25% of the chemicals are implicated in cancer, 30-some percent are endocrine disruptors. It just gets worse and worse. These are chemicals we shouldn't have anywhere near our families, our farms, our streams, our rivers, our groundwater.
Well, so if fracking is safe, why does it have to be exempt from the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and three other environmental national regulations?
It's a very good point.
Bill, we're going to let you go.
Thank you, Alan.
Believe me, everybody's interested in this. And when you go, then somebody else will call, and that light will start all over again.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bill. Appreciate it. Okay. And let's go to Jamie. Jamie in Ellenville. Okay, Jamie, you're on.
You know, Alan, even when fracking is done what they say perfectly, when they say that there has been no loss or damage, the amount of hydrocarbons that are released into the atmosphere just from the process alone makes it something we shouldn't be doing. Fracking is like we're a heroin addict, and that we decide we don't want to give up shooting heroin because we just found a great supply of it in our house, and we don't want to see it go to waste.
But it's so interesting. But it's so interesting, Jamie. And let's get John in on this too, because you know, you have all these Democrats who are for it. You have Chuck Schumer coming out and saying all the Democrats, you know, are for it. Most of the Democrats are for it. And I don't get it. I mean, I just don't understand why.
Reaction.
No, I don't know about that. That's too easy to dismiss. You know, I mean, it is. It's an economic model, I think. I think one can make that argument. Because yesterday, of course, we saw Marco Rubio, of all things, saying he doesn't believe in climate change. Just doesn't believe in it. Just doesn't believe the scientists are right about that. And people can say, I don't believe it. But there is.
Well, that's because the world's only 6,000 years old.
But how come what's happening here in New York State is so different, John, than from everywhere else? In other words, something motivated New Yorkers in a way that did not motivate people in Pennsylvania or the Colorado or these other places.
Well, certainly saying fracking is like saying climate change doesn't exist. So we have a pretty clear analogy there. And Chuck Schumer is completely wrong when he says that most Democrats support it, as the polls show. But as for why New York has had such an overwhelming movement against fracking, including 170-some municipalities that have put in place prohibitions, I think it comes down to, in part, the fact that New Yorkers got to witness what happened in Pennsylvania before it came here. They looked across the border, and they saw widespread ruin, water contamination, just environmental destruction
across
the state.
Well, wait a second. But if you ask the people in Pennsylvania, they still don't believe that, do they?
Well, which people do you ask? A recent poll showed that 2/3 of Pennsylvanians supported a moratorium because of the health impacts that they were concerned about.
Alan?
Yes, Jamie?
The difference is that the reservoirs are upstate New York, and New York City doesn't care about the economic development of upstate when it comes to its drinking water. So that gave us enough
pause to realize what the problems are, and
then the rest of us sort of got on.
Jamie,
because at first,
Jamie, you can't make you can't make it up, because the fact of the matter is that the New York City reservoirs have been exempted, as have the Syracuse ones, which means the hell with the rest of you. You know,
but those came out for that when those regulations came out. We all started to say, "Hey, why are their reservoirs exempted and not us?
Exactly.
What is bad for them that's good for us?"
Okay,
so
Jamie,
we had a chance to applaud.
Okay, hold on a second. Go ahead.
Well, here's the bottom line, and we've seen this across the state: the more New Yorkers learn about fracking, the more they oppose it. And in 6 years of looking at this in Pennsylvania, seeing the science that's come out across the country, the horrors it's been in the rest of the country, New Yorkers have put their foot down and said, we don't want our communities poisoned. We want our water clean. We want our air clean.
So, John, are you optimistic?
I think we've had just this amazing movement in New York, which has honestly spurred a really rapidly growing national movement against fracking. And we have a pretty incredible movement holding Governor Cuomo to his promise that he won't do this unless it's safe for all New Yorkers and it protects all of the water. When you look at the totality of the science, that admirable and appropriate standard cannot be met. So we are certainly planning to hold the governor to his promise, which means a ban on fracking.
Okay, Jamie from Ellenville, thank you for calling. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. We have to stop burning hydrocarbons, period. So it doesn't make a difference what they say the reasons are.
Thank you, Jamie. Let's go to Mark in Hillsdale. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Good afternoon. A couple of things. Growing up in Columbia County in the late, since the 80s, but I remember a lot of debate was around the cement plant that was going to be put in.
Indeed, I remember that very well.
The St. Lawrence, right, company. And they were, you know, same horrible environmental record. The only reason they could try to even put this thing in this in New York State was that the regulations weren't there. However, at the same time, there was a lot of grassroots opposition to that, and it seemed, you know, there could have been some way to hold this corporation accountable and put their feet to the fire and to have them do things the way we wanted them to do in terms of environmental regulations and things. Obviously, with fracking, Governor Cuomo has had this whole, you know, PR campaign of, you know, bringing back, you know, New York yogurt, you know, making, you know, acknowledging the dairy farmers up in Washington, Warren County, you know, counties further up in the northern part of the state. So where does he stand in terms of, you know, here's something that directly threatens this, the agricultural.
Okay, Mark, because we're up against a hard break here, but I wanted to ask you, John, that's a very good question Mark is asking. The governor clearly, I thought, was for it, you know, for fracking in the beginning. He seems to have had a change of heart. Is that because of an unexpected reaction on the part of New Yorkers?
Well, we hope that's played a factor, but we hope the governor is looking at the science. And if you do look at the science, you see things like you brought forward. This is a threat to New York's existing industries like agriculture and dairy farms and yogurt and tourism and wine and beer, which is why so many of those farmers and vintners and brewers have come out and said, this threatens our industry and it cannot go forward.
But there are also farmers who say, don't deprive me of my money so I can go to Florida, right?
There certainly are. There are certainly farmers.
Okay,
on both sides.
Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to have a short break and we will be right back. I mean, short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com. Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steaks, seafood, cocktails, and wines using local organic products, banquet facilities, and patio dining, bistro63.com. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 8 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD. EHS1.org. And Global Renaissance Perspective, Saratoga Springs, New York, announcing a grant-funded kindergarten Chinese immersion program in the Saratoga State Park starting in August. GlobeKindergarten.org for registration.
Okay, we're back, and so are you. Okay, let's go to Eileen in Saugerties. Hi, Eileen in Saugerties. How you doing? Long
Hi,
time.
Hi, Ellen and John. Yeah. I want to thank John for not pussyfooting when he said what he said about the president, because it's clear that the president is not an environmentalist. Right after the 2010 BP horror, he was for more offshore drilling. But anyway, that's beside the point for fracking. My comment on the fracking is when I was doing an article on it a couple of years ago, I researched the proprietary chemicals. I tried to research the proprietary chemicals that are in fracking process. And as you probably know, there's over 200 of them. that are not allowed to be divulged because they are, again, proprietary. Even the EPA isn't allowed to ask. And when the West Virginia water was contaminated a couple of months ago, you may recall, and also North Carolina, Duke Energy down there, who is a power unto themselves, refused to say what was in the water that was contaminated because they're proprietary. So why is our EPA so feeble that they're not allowed to publish or even find out what these chemicals are so we can be warned about them?
John?
Well, we have a really unfortunate pattern of the EPA really betraying the trust of Americans on this issue.
Right.
You may know they at first had started three investigations into water contamination where they had hard evidence of water contamination mm-hmm. linked to fracking in Texas, Wyoming, and Pennsylvania. And then in 2012, around the presidential election, they abruptly ended those investigations.
Yeah.
Since then, whistleblowers came out and said that was against what the regional experts who were looking at it advised and clearly what the evidence showed. And then even further since then, we've seen independent water tests from Duke University have showed that that water in Texas, for instance, is still contaminated and
right.
residents don't have clean water. That's across the board. The EPA has not stepped up. They've not met their responsibility to protect Americans' water and their air and their health on this issue. And that's a tragedy. And it's going to go down in history, certainly for Obama on his legacy as having really failed to uphold his duties.
He's done no better than George Bush. As far as the EPA goes, it's totally emasculated, in my opinion.
It's a very sad state.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Eileen, thank you. All right. Let's go to Ron in Hyde Park. Ron in Hyde Park, your turn.
All right. Alan, just let me preface this by saying I have not taken a stand yet, either pro or anti-fracking.
Gotcha.
I understand the economic implications. But what I want to know is, and I understand that you have a left-wing bent on this station, why is there no representative from the pro-fracking industry?
Well, first of all, Ron, there have been many times here. And
no, I understand that.
Excuse me. Well, wait a second. You asked the question. As soon as I start to answer the question, you interrupt. I'm telling you, we've had many people from both sides on this issue. We'll be glad, by the way, to send you some of the premiums that we have given away with both sides on this issue. Today, we decided this morning because of this hearing that we would have John on. And believe me, we've had the lady from Colorado, the fracker from Colorado. We've had
right.
the people from New York State. So please, frankly, when I saw the little yellow piece of paper, and John will attest to this, which said pro-fracking representation, I moved you to the head of the line, believe it or not. I took you from last to front.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, okay, so please, let's be careful here. Go ahead.
No, that was just it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I took care of that. Let's go to Fred in Sullivan County. Okay, Fred, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, John. John, we met at Bearsville at that wonderful concert with Natalie Merchant last year. Great work. Two things. Alan, at the top of the show, you mentioned about the pre-treating of the roads with the fracking waste.
Somebody called in, yeah.
There was a very humorous article in a local newspaper about that. Besides the chemicals and the radioactive materials, there are lubricants that are spread on the roads. And one of the town trucks actually slid off the road because the road was slippery. So I can't understand pre-treating roads for ice problems and snow problems when the material itself is slippery. And before it even snowed, a truck nearly had an accident. The other thing I want to mention is something that some of the attorneys that are working with some of these groups are working on is the language to put in the legal notice section of newspapers. Letting folks know that drilling companies and people who lease their land for their financial gain may be held responsible for the health effects of the migration of those chemicals from their property to their neighbors.
Okay, that's your question. What's your answer, John?
I don't know all the specifics about that. I'm not an attorney, so I can't mm-hmm. speak to the legal side. But I will say there are, similarly to that perhaps, increasingly concerns about the effects of fracking on property value and with mortgages and homeowners insurance, because of the presence of what are hazardous materials, many of the toxic chemicals. And we've seen a few studies now come out, including from Duke University, showing that the presence of fracking, even if it's not on your land, but within about a mile, could significantly decrease the value of your property.
But
so I think we need to look into those issues more, and that's part of the bigger picture of the economics of fracking, which are not so rosy as the gas industry would have us believe.
Now, there is a fight going on that's interesting that at least seemed to me I read in the papers this morning that the frackers from the other states are saying that they are not exporting stuff into New York. And some of the New Yorkers are saying you're lying. What do you know about that?
Well, New York State certainly is taking some of the fracking waste. For example, the drill cuttings are coming into at least four of our landfills, and increasingly residents near those areas are concerned about the radioactivity of those drill cuttings, which some folks have measured as being pretty high. And then the issue with the fracking waste is increasingly a concern, and I know some of the state legislative members are still asking questions of the DEC to try to figure out exactly where these this fracking wastewater is coming from, where it's being put down, and those questions still need to be answered.
Yeah, that's well documented, John. Thank you for that. And also, folks should know that some of the piping that are used in these wells are then being used afterwards for playground equipment, and they're encrusted with radioactive waste from
Fred, in all honesty, I mean, you can make the assertion. We don't know that, and we don't want to be responsible.
I can't speak to that either.
And thank you, Fred, for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551 for the first time, two free phones, and it's your turn if you want to do it. We want to hear from you on either side. Let's go to Michelle in Woodstock. Michelle, you're on.
Yes, hello, Alan.
Hey.
Good afternoon. I'm in complete agreement with John, and I'm really scientific-based when I make my judgment about this. I'm an educated person with two master's degrees, and you cannot put benzene in the earth and not expect to have no water contamination, number one. Number two, we have great farmland here with our microbrews, our grapes, our yogurt. How could you even think about doing this to a farmland? And then I'm going to relate a little personal experience. Because all the pollution is blowing from the Dakotas and the South from BP or whatever is going on in PA, is blowing through our blessed Hudson Valley, unbeknownst to people, there is a spike in brain cancer in the last few months. I caught that wave. Guess what? I'm sick now.
Oh, boy. Okay, John, you want to talk to this?
Well, thanks for the call, Michelle. I certainly agree with you that there's no safe way to do this. You know, one thing I like to point out is that you have various industry representatives and a lot of politicians saying that we just need to regulate this better and somehow we can make it safe.
All right. So let's go to Helen in Ithaca. Helen, you're on. Helen, you're on. Hello, Helen.
Hi. My name is Helen Slache.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Helen.
Hi. And I was calling. I was interested in your earlier discussion about why it might be that Schumer and Obama and other politicians are supporting fracking if it's not safe.
Right.
And I think there's a pretty straightforward answer to that, that the sort of corporations that are behind fracking, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, and the like, have tremendous economic power. They've forged that into political power. And when you take that corporate control and influence on government, combine it with the corporate control of the media, it's difficult for the truth to get out, for the people to know what's happening, and they're able to just continue to repeat the big lie. Goebbels warned us, you know, about the ability to do this, to just repeat something over and over again, and as if that makes it true. And as far as whether or not this would make sense for our economy, extraction and environmental destruction have never led to economic prosperity. Just look at West Virginia or Pennsylvania. A healthy economy requires a healthy environment, and you're getting just the opposite here. This is subverting democracy. It's resulting in poverty, and there's no reason to believe these people. They're the same people who sold us the mortgage crisis, the banking crisis, and safe cigarettes.
Okay. John, any reaction?
Well, it's hard to say it better than Helen. I know Helen from Ithaca. She's a tremendous asset to the movement. She actually, I'm very proud to say, just won the Goldman Prize, essentially the Nobel Prize of the environmental movement. It's just one award at each continent. So it's a pleasure to have her on.
Well, congratulations, Helen.
Well, thank you, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's go to Ellie or Eli. I'm not sure which it is. Is it Ellie or Eli?
Eli is good, John.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Alan.
Yeah.
I recently heard an interview of a major oil producer, a multimillionaire from the Buffalo area, who stated that the major oil companies, gas companies, the ExxonMobils, the Halliburtons, the aforementioned, are leaving New York State because, according to him, there's not enough product here. It's not worth their while. They're selling out their interests to smaller companies, and that, according to him, the state does not have these incredible reserves that we're led to believe that other areas of the country are going to be much more financially beneficial to the majors to go to. I'm wondering if you've heard any of this.
Hi, this is John. I'm familiar with some of that research and some of those data. In fact, you're right. There is a lot of evidence to support the fact that New York does not have the shale gas reserves and therefore the prospect for jobs or economic growth that was long promised. And we've seen the USGS greatly downplay the amount of gas underneath New York State and then a range of economists and geologists who have done the same. It seems like there are just some small pockets in the state that have a significant amount of gas that would potentially be economically viable. But a lot of the areas where there was so much speculation and promises to landowners and politicians and residents alike really wouldn't come true. And we're seeing this across the country, too, where shale gas deposits are not living up to the hype of the shale gas boom, which is really a bubble. In a lot of places, it's starting to bust, where production precipitously declined. So they thought they'd get large amounts of gas out of the well for 10, 20, 30 years. But in fact, it's only economically viable for one or a couple of years because the same amount of gas just doesn't come out and doesn't reach expectations. So that's a major issue, with the result for everyday Americans really being the jobs aren't going to last, the few that come, because the gas is going to dry up and then the gas companies leave town, go somewhere else, and leave the environmental and the health ramifications behind for the communities to deal with.
John, is the storage the big issue?
The storage of the gas?
Of the water.
Well, it's certainly one of the issues. It's one of the issues for which there's no solution. And that comes back to this whole issue of the fracking waste. It's one of those problems where the industry just has no answer. They've tried to dispose of it in deep injection wells, which across the country has been causing earthquakes. In Oklahoma, as significant as 5.7 magnitude. They've tried putting it through special treatment plants and releasing it in the water. In Pennsylvania, that's left a legacy of radiation in streams. They've tried putting it on the streams, and increasingly, as you noted, states are starting to ban that because of serious concerns. And it just goes to show the sort of arrogance of this industry, that they can just use these hundreds of toxic chemicals, blast them deep underground with these thin casings in the wells to try to protect our groundwater and our aquifers and our streams and our rivers. And then the end result is very disastrous for all the people who are left to live there or deal with the waste products.
Okay. Hey, Eli, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll be reading a couple of things real fast to you. Somebody called, Carl called and said, could you ask Mr. Armstrong about the studies in Dimock, Pennsylvania that the EPA never completed? Do you know anything about that?
Well, I spoke to that briefly earlier. These are in Dimock, Pennsylvania, that's one place where the EPA had opened an investigation into water contamination and had for a little while been delivering drinking water to residents who had impacted water. And in fact, there was strong evidence of water contamination. And then right before the 2012 presidential election, the EPA suddenly closed up shop and canceled those investigations.
Okay. Two, it's my understanding that fracking companies resorted to re-injecting the contaminated water, fracking fluid, back into the ground as a way of disposing it. Is that true?
Yeah, those are the deep injection wells, which have been linked to many earthquakes across the country.
Okay. So, and then Brian writes us, last winter, I pulled up next to a truck that was spreading liquid de-icer on Highway 20 in Duanesburg, New York. The driver told me it was a solution of beet juice. How can we find out what was in that truck?
Well, I don't really know, but I would start with the town supervisor, call around and ask them, make inquiries, and then go from there.
Okay, let's go to take a short break. We'll be right back, and then we're going to get Kevin and Arthur and Julius and Erica and whoever else is on that fifth phone right now.
Support for WAMC comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. The Linda, WAMC's performing arts studio, presenting the annual Phil Oaks Song Night, hosted by Sonny Oaks and Wanda Fisher, Saturday, May 24th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org. and Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Okay, and we are back with John Armstrong, the All-American boy. So glad you're here.
Well, thanks, Alan. It's a pleasure.
Okay, let's go to Kevin in Cambridge. Kevin in Cambridge, you're on.
Hi. One thing I haven't heard mentioned, but when they speak of this tremendous resource of natural gas that we have in our state, is it only makes sense at a price, and at the price of natural gas right now, I think there's very little, if any at all, that's economically feasible. So we may have a resource base that natural gas is $6 or above, but we don't where natural gas is right now. And I suspect that this may be part of why Governor Cuomo has eased off on his support, because I don't think the people who have the plays under the control would want to be fracking at the current prices anyways.
Okay, now Kevin, we're into the last round, which means everybody has to go fast.
Sure.
So it's a good question. I'm not quite sure I understood it. John, could you sort of deal with it?
Well, the issue of the price of gas basically comes down to, is this economically viable, which also relates to, will there be jobs? Will there be economic gains? And I think you're right, Kevin. In a lot of cases, they won't make much, if any, money from New York gas at the current prices, which is why there's been such a push from the industry to export the gas overseas to China and India with LNG, liquefied natural gas exports, which are these enormous facilities and energy-intensive process, because they can sell the gas for around four or five times as much in the Asian markets.
But wait, John, because I've heard from people who in Great Barrington, where I live, who have gone to natural gas, that they expected it to be a lot cheaper, which is what happened when they ordered their systems. But now their bills are getting closer to what the oil bills were.
Well, it's certainly volatile, the prices. And let me tell you one thing.
Natural gas has moved up, but it has not. I mean, it was under $3, and now it's over $4. Yeah. But at one point, it was over $10.
Okay.
Yeah, and at one point, I think it was down in the $2 range. But, you know, this is one of the issues with natural gas and fossil fuels in general, is the price of the resource continues to change. It's very volatile. What we should be doing is expanding solar and wind, which is always there. You don't have to pay for the solar. You don't have to pay for the wind. Which is a much smarter direction for New York State to go.
Okay. Hey, listen, Kevin, I wish I could give you more time, but I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Let's go to Arthur in West Shokan. Arthur, you're on.
Yes. I just returned from visiting a declining family member in northeast Pennsylvania, Montrose. It's the county seat, about 20 miles south of Vestal and Binghamton. It's been devastated as a community. I was talking to one of the merchants there. No one comes into town anymore because of all the water and other trucks going through town. She counted over during a four-hour period, 450 of these really huge industrial trucks. I went to dinner there that night. You have to sit on that road. And during the course of an hour of a pizza dinner, I counted 48 trucks. People are afraid to go into town because they might get hurt by getting hit by a truck. People are leaving the town. They're selling their property. The social devastation in that community is incredible, and I just wanted to pass that on.
Well, Arthur, thanks for your call. Appreciate it very much. I can only say, you know, when people call and they give us these reports, you have your say. But I think that it's important to know that neither John or I may know the information ourselves. So what you say is what you say. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Julius, our old friend in Hillsdale. Hi, Julius.
Hello, Alan and John. Couple of comments. One, the industry and pro-frackers often say, well, fracking has been used for many years. It's perfectly safe. You know, we have a lot of history, which is totally false. The current horizontal, high-pressure, high-volume hydrofracking and the chemical mixes and so on that developed to be used with that really were only perfected to the stage you're using today around 2000, 2002. So we only have 10, maybe a maximum of 13, 14 years worth of experience, but very little data collection, very little information that can, we can really use to analyze. So those claims are just totally misleading and completely false. Secondly, a former industry person came out recently, and that is oil and gas industry. I don't know if John heard this, came out recently and said, in his opinion, fracking was unsafe and it could never be made safe. And then one more thing to just illustrate the disregard that actually that some of these companies have for the environment. On the Bakken fields where a lot of oil fracking is being done, oil drilling, because they don't have a way to get to actually make use of the methane, the gas that's coming out of the wells, they just vent the methane into the air. So we're getting more greenhouse gases from that. We're losing natural gas that could be used elsewhere, but they made no provisions for either storing it or piping it, so it's just being allowed to escape in order to get to the oil. Those are the three things I wanted to mention.
Julius, thanks for the call. Appreciate
sure.
it. Okay, as I've been telling you, we're in the final round here, and that means please be brief as you can. Erica in Albany. Erica, you're on.
Hi, my name is Erica Powers. I was recently at a stakeholder participation at the Yale Center for Environmental Law and Policy with John. We don't necessarily see eye to eye, but I believe we respect each other. I am the lead editor of a book called Beyond the Fracking Wars, which is a guide for lawyers, public officials, planners, and citizens.
Okay, but Erica, because we're in this final round, could you give us the thesis of the book real fast?
The thesis of the book is that it is necessary to look at facts and to stop picking facts and cherry-picking facts and arguing past one another, which is a great deal of what I've been hearing, unfortunately, on this program, but what one hears regularly, and which is what motivated Beth Kinney and me to write the book. So we have a chapter on what fracturing actually is, how the technology works.
Okay. What's the name? Which is, in fact, deeply complex
and has a great deal of agency and a great deal of delegation of particular functions to subcontractors. And then there are a number of chapters.
Whoa! I told you it's the lightning round. John, did you want to respond?
Sure. I think I certainly agree with you. We need to be looking at the facts, and we need to have a very informed discussion and debate about this. And I hope that's exactly what New York does: is look at all the facts and use those facts from a very scientific perspective to make its decision about fracking. And in my opinion, and having worked and read many scientific studies and listened to many medical and scientific experts, it's clear that there's no way to do fracking without significant risk and harm to our health and environment. One other source I'd point us all to is the Canadian Council of Academics, or Academies, just came out with a 292-page report that did much of this and looked at much of the science. And ultimately, their conclusions were there's a lot we don't know, but there are a lot of risks and a lot of evidence for harm as
okay,
well.
Okay. Now, Erica, is there a safe way to frack?
To one thing that has come up in the course of this discussion, and that is that solar and wind are preferable to fracturing. Many of us see natural gas as a transitional fuel away from coal, but I think it's very important to think about the industrialization of the landscape.
No, I asked you a question, Erica. You're not answering it.
I haven't heard it.
Well, then maybe I wasn't on the air, which was, is there a safe way to frack?
There could be. Part of the worst aspects of fracturing are caused by insufficient safety precautions during drilling and when a casing is drilled into the through the groundwater. When you put a pipe in vertically before it can go horizontally, you have to put various layers of casings of cement around it. And some companies, such as Southwestern Energy, are now requiring their contractors to meet very stringent casing standards, because Southwestern and the Environmental Defense Fund did a study several years ago and discovered that casings were the major source of
pollution. Stop there. John?
I certainly agree with you, Erica. The casings are one of the major areas of concern. And just like you go out on your sidewalk and you see cement cracking, we've seen that exact same thing, or similar to it at a more technical level, happen with fracturing wells, with the casings. They are relatively thin layers of cement, which are the main barriers between our groundwater sources and the toxic chemicals used in the fracking process. And so far, what we've seen is those casings inherently fail, some percentage of them immediately and more over time. For instance, in the last 3 years in Pennsylvania, 6 to 7% of new well casings have failed. And simultaneously, we've seen increasingly more instances of groundwater contamination per Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection records. And in my opinion, it's very clear from that that, to answer Alan's question, there's no safe way to frack, and no New Yorkers want to be the guinea pigs on this dangerous process.
Well, what bothered me by what Erica just said was it could be. Well, I mean, is that a chance worth taking if it could be, as opposed to yet the, your answer would have been yes, there is a safe way to do it? Erica?
There is a safe way to do it if, and this is not yet the case in New York, if there is adequate regulatory supervision and if there are adequately trained specialists who do, for example, the casing, but who also do many of the other subcontracted parts of drilling. Part of the problem is that DEC's budget has been decimated, and so it is not at all clear, even if there is the will to enforce, that there is the personnel.
Erica, what's the name of the book?
The book is called Beyond the Fracking Wars.
Okay, Erica, I thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Schenectady. Jerry, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, Alan and John. What seems to me is that we need more people in the higher levels of government who have the intelligence to accept that the climatologist's conclusions that climate change is real and that human activity plays a major role in making it happen. So what we need is more of the people who are calling into your show and who are listening to the show today who agree with these things, and to encourage people we know who understand the realities of climate change and the dangers of fossil fuels to consider running for office.
Okay.
Because to believe that we have people in there who are making decisions about our country now who don't even accept that climate change is real.
Okay, just to be specific, Jerry, relate this to our discussion today about fracking.
For people who think fracking is an acceptable way to go, it seems to me is that, I'm sorry, they don't pass a minimum standard as far as I'm concerned for being in the position of having a hand in public policy.
Jerry, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, let's go to Anthony in Milford, Pennsylvania. Anthony.
Hi, Alan. This is Anthony. I live in Milford, which it happens to be between the gas field in Bradford County and the markets to the east. I'm talking about New York, Connecticut, Vermont, Massachusetts.
And we also happen to have a radio station there, so that's why you're here.
Actually, you do, yes. Beyond the immediate environmental effects of fracking, and there are lots of them, are two other things you need to consider. One is that once the gas comes out of the ground, it has to be gotten to market, and that means pipelines. Pipelines mean huge construction, huge environmental devastation, huge tracts of real estate have to be gotten. And so even the people here in Pike County who supported the fracking industry, who supported the gas industry, they were out protesting the pipelines that came through here. They were out carrying signs and picketing because of the way the gas companies did this. The gas companies have actually funded a program in our local school to train high school kids to be welders. Forget college, forget anything else they might do. When they get out of high school, they go to work welding on the pipelines. Now, some people think that's a great idea, but that brings us to the second part of what I want to say, and that is that the gas companies in Pennsylvania have gotten control of our government. Our governor, Tom Corbett, took $1 million in quote-unquote campaign contributions from these people to give them carte blanche in Pennsylvania, and that's what they've done. They have eminent domain rights. 2 years ago, they passed a law in the state legislature that allows them to countermand even local zoning and use ordinances. That law was overturned in the state courts. But fracking brings huge amounts of money, and that money buys corruption in government. When the gas comes out of the ground, they don't have to do anything to it. It's a product.
Well, when you say corruption in government, do you mean influence in government? Is corruption
influence
too strong?
In government? They have bought our entire state government. We have the state universities in Pennsylvania. You know, as Penn State has had to double its tuition in the last 5 years, they've cut back on all levels of education. They've cut back on funding for
and why is
for
that,
libraries,
Anthony? How
museums.
Anthony? So why is the state university doubling its tuition having to do with fracking? I'm sorry.
Fracking is only the beginning of the problem, is what I'm saying. Once the gas comes out of the ground, it has to be gotten to market.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with doubling the tuition of the state university?
The state government, it's a Republican government, they've cut back on education at all levels.
Yeah, but what does it have to do with fracking?
I'm sorry?
What does it have to do with fracking?
They own the governor. They own the legislature.
I
see. The money that would normally be, Pennsylvania is the only state in the country with significant mineral resources that doesn't have a fee. We don't get a penny from them. We're shipping $1 trillion worth of gas out of the state and not getting anything for it.
Okay, Anthony, powerful argument. Thank you. Let's go to Judy in Lake Sheldrake. Judy, you got to go fast.
Hi, okay. I just wanted to say that the man Julius was correct about the Bakken Shale. They actually waste enough natural gas to power 100,000 homes every day.
In North Dakota.
Okay,
hold on a second, Judy. John has something to say. Go ahead, Judy.
I just add to that. In North Dakota, they flare so much of this excess methane since they're going to
oil. What does that mean?
Oil.
They burn it when it comes out.
They put a stack up in the air. They put it up, and then they light it on fire because that's actually not quite as bad for the environment. But it's so significant, the flaring, that it looks like a city from outer space in rural North Dakota where practically no one lives.
Right.
Judy, good point. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Frank in Colony. Okay, Frank, I think you may be the last one. Go ahead.
Okay. Do we have any collective data about before and after testing of the water before the fracking project goes on and then and afterwards?
John.
There are some data on this issue. Increasingly, more studies are starting to take that before and after data. Some already do. I don't think we have the time to go into the specific ones, but certainly if you look through some of the resources online, such as Physician Scientists and Engineers for Healthy Energy or Concerned Health Professionals of New York, resources are on their websites online.
Hey, Frank, I'm sorry. That has to be it for now.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Okay. And I want to apologize to Mark in Albany. We're not going to be able to get to talk to him about methane emissions. Anything you want to say about that real fast?
Well, methane emissions, it's one of the leaked byproducts of natural gas. Natural gas is mostly methane. Methane is a particularly potent greenhouse gas, which ultimately means it's very, very bad for the climate, particularly in the short term of a couple decades. Which ultimately, the bottom line is, makes fracking disastrous for the climate, and we need to move away from it.
Okay, thank you. We're about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to Mark. I'd also like to thank John Armstrong for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake, local organic grass-fed beef burgers, Milwaukee hot dogs, bison, and fish fry, open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 8 p.m., PiratesLakesideGrill.com, Adelphi Center, Hudson Valley Center, a Master's in Social Work Program, a personal and in-person education and advanced direct practice, HudsonValley.Adelphi.edu. Our old songs concerts presenting Indian classical and folk musician Usted Shafat Khan this Friday at 8 p.m. oldsongs.org. And WAMC Spotlight on Underwriters this month featuring news about Friends of Global Renaissance Perspectives, William H. Buckley Farm, and Union Graduate College, WAMC.org. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineering work was
done so beautifully by our friend Jessica. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbeck. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. And remember the lockbox. You can't have programs like this without having a station. And we can't have a station without the money. I mean, there, I've said it. All you have to do is go to WMC.org, click on the lockbox, and put something in. Maybe a penny, maybe $5, maybe $1,000. But do it, and do it now, because we can't do it without you. And I mean that. So stay tuned now for a news update.